Brilliant, thanks. Evening. I am really getting to love coming to the evening services, partially because you have Choco Leibniz biscuits. I know. You missed it. Yeah, great. And it really is faith in action tonight, because if you have a cloak, you know, ask for your cloak, give him everything. Heather has given up multiple sweaters and socks for a very wet singer here. you can find out more about the story later. Okay. So, tonight, Mission Impossible. I found this flowchart on the internet, obviously church flowchart, that's what you think of, about how to have an argument with a woman, which seems like Mission Impossible. I don't know if you can read that. But, yeah. My experience is true, you lose whatever you do there. I like the simplicity of it. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice if for everything important, there was a simple flowchart like this, or a set of questions to give you an answer. You know, if you do this, then that, you get such and such. And I show you this simple flowchart because we're looking at how the Jewish Pharisees were dealing with some important issues. And they were creating a set of rules about how to live a life that pleased God. Last week, Simon talked about Matthew's gospel being written to ordinary first century Jewish people. If you missed it last week, unfortunately, you can't download it. We had a technical error. So you snooze, you lose. And tonight, Jesus is speaking to the ordinary Jewish people again in a radical way, which was different to how the Pharisees, who were very influential, were speaking to them. The Pharisees were this Jewish sect that tried to teach people how to understand the law and what God wanted from them. And their approach was to interpret the written law and make it applicable to their current situation, which is why they were very popular and influential. So they take the law and discuss it and try and make it practical by spelling out every potential kind of application. And I was thinking about this. This is just a hypothetical example, but you can imagine how it might develop. When I was talking this through earlier at home, and I was trying this, my son said, "Daddy, why do you talk in a funny voice?" Okay. so I'm just going to do it in my normal voice. Okay. But this Jew says, you know, it says in the Ten Commandments, keep the Sabbath holy. Well, what does holy actually mean? And the Pharisee says, "Well, the law says you can't work on the Sabbath. That's holiness." Well, what do we mean by work? Because I really want to know if I've sinned. Well, you can't plow your field, for instance, or grind grain to make flour. Oh, okay, great. But supposing I go to see a friend for lunch, and I take a pot of flowers as a gift, as you do, and there happens to be some grain spilt on the floor. Yeah, where are we going with this? As I put down the pot and it crushes the grain, can I use that for making flour? Well, now that is a very, very interesting question. And it's an important issue, which we need to be clear about. Yeah, great, so what's the answer? Well, how far is your friend's house away? Because if it's too far, well, all that walking could be considered working. And how heavy is the pot of flowers? Because again, if it's too heavy, then that could be considered working. And how did the flowers get into the pot? Did you cut them? Yeah. And I'm sure you get the idea. There's lots of answers, but it's missing the point, really. And the Pharisees dealt with all these examples, these questions, not just to do with the Sabbath, but to do with everything, by creating rules. And they built up a whole library of rules and regulations about how the law was to be lived out and what you could and what you couldn't do to please God. And if you followed all the rules and you did the right things in the right way at the right time, boom, that's it. You are in with God. Which might end up with a flowchart a bit like this. Okay. Have you fulfilled the law perfectly? No, okay, offer a sacrifice, try harder. Yes, are you God? No, don't lie. Yes, okay, we'll stone you. All right. And you notice it says, "You're a liar, stone him," because obviously in those days, women aren't even allowed to speak like that. So, you know, that's how the flowchart might have been. And many of the Pharisees were kind of committed to that process. They did the right thing at the right time. They followed the rules. They don't do this, don't do that. And they went to bed at night saying, I haven't stolen anything. I haven't murdered anyone. I haven't had an affair. I sent my mother a postcard. Perfect. Tick, tick, tick. Boom. I've lived a perfect life today. Didn't I do well? But the Pharisees had fundamentally got it wrong, because while they were focusing on the letter of the law, they were forgetting the point of the law. They were replacing the point of the law with the mother of all to-do lists. And I'm married to a forensic accountant who just, to-do lists come naturally, so I know what that feels like. But then Jesus arrives with a totally different message, saying, it's not about the rules, it's about relationship. The purpose of the law was to develop a dependent relationship between God and his people. And there's not much relationship going on with a big set of rules and a to-do list. So the people who are hearing this are probably wondering, what does this mean about the law? About what the Pharisees say about the law? Is it all over? Can we forget about it? Can we give up on the rules? Can you imagine how you would feel if someone suddenly told you that all the striving and effort that you put in into following every single minute rule was no longer needed? But Jesus didn't do that. He says, no, it's not abolished. The law is crucial. Every single word of it, every letter, every stroke of the pen, all the law is revealed by God for his people. So it's crucial, and it acts like a mirror reflecting the condition of our hearts. I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Jesus came to fulfill the law by being righteousness, by being our righteousness. Because the law requires righteousness. And Jesus says, don't worry, I've got that covered. And it's a bit like that scene, and I have to admit, I am entirely dependent on Simon for this analogy. But it's a bit like that situation where somebody might go to the fair and they go on the shooting gallery and they get a perfect score and they win the teddy bear and they give it to you. It's a good analogy. It was his. And I saw that scene in, I think there's a very similar scene in Despicable Me, where Gru totally destroys the dodgy fairground shooting gallery to win the fluffy unicorn prize for Agnes. And just for sheer indulgence, I thought we'd watch it.
He's so fluffy, I'm gonna die!
You gotta let us play for it.
No.
Come on!
How much for the fluffy unicorn?
Oh, well, it is not for sale, but all you gotta do to win it is knock down that little spaceship there. It's easy!
Is it still on the thing?
It's on the...
Right. Do you want to watch it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crumbs. This could be a problem. I was laughing at Simon there because we had a discussion about technology earlier.
He's so fast!
One more time!
Just one more. I accidentally closed my eyes.
Okay, it's a really great clip. And I encourage you to watch it. I encourage you to watch it. It's very good. But anyway, Gru takes out his homemade gun. Right. And totally destroys things. So, your homework. You know, in all honesty, that was purely for indulgence. So let's move on and look at the second part of our reading, where Jesus takes a rule from the law and he totally transforms the conversation. You've heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Again, don't practice this with a six-year-old boy in the house. Jesus shifts the conversation from focusing on our external actions and behavior to the internal state of our heart. Because our behavior matters, but the state of our heart is crucial. And you can almost imagine that same Jew responding, you know, what are you talking about, Jesus? I mean, I'm barely managing all the other stuff. Now I only go to my neighbor's house for Sunday, and I'm not carrying anything, and we're just going to look at the flowers, and now you're telling me I have to examine the state of my heart as well. I can't handle it. And Jesus says, I know. Don't worry. I've got it. And here's where we get to the key theme for today, and it's, for me at least, is the theme of grace. You see, the Pharisees, with all their years of schooling, their practice and their hard work following lists, they couldn't really shift their relationship with God. All their actions were focused on external behavior rather than the internal state of their heart. And they couldn't make that shift on their own. And no one can. You can't live a life that is holy and pure in your own strength and ability. You can't, I can't, none of us can. That's the point. We need to make that shift. So what's the point of Jesus saying, well, you've got to be more righteous than the Pharisees, your actions, and giving us this example that shows a change of heart as well, going the extra mile, turning our cheek, giving our coat or our cardigan, whatever. It's not to make us feel bad about how much we fail or useless about our own inability. The point is to try and stop us from trying to do it all on our own and in our own strength and turn to him and rely on his strength and his goodness. And I used to do some work with people who were ex-military, and one of them told me this story about non-commissioned officer training. I can't remember if it was in the Army or the Marines or something like that, but non-commissioned officers. And when they come for non-commissioned officer training, they do the assault course. Now, they'll have done the assault course hundreds of times as a recruit to get through their training, get their badges, etc. But then when they come as a non-commissioned officer, one of the things that they have to do is they have to do the same assault course, but usually with some impossible task, like carrying a railway sleeper or, you know, carrying a something, you know. And it's done for one simple reason: to get them to realize they can't do it on their own. Because when they were training and they were going through their fitness, it's about them and their strength and their personal resilience. But when they're working as an officer, they have to get a group of people working together. And it's to drive home that message that as an officer, you've got to be able to make a decision between when you do it on your own and when you do it together. And I think Jesus is raising the bench here, raising the bar, so that hopefully we will see we can't do this on our own. And Jesus says, I know, that's the point. So Jesus wants us to give up relying on ourselves and to turn to him, to receive from him everything we need to enter the kingdom of heaven, even though we don't deserve it. That's what grace is. We get everything we need and don't deserve despite everything we've done. And you've probably heard before that the acronym of grace means God's riches at Christ's expense. And it's old, but it's so true. But then that makes me think, well, if we're going to get it anyway, then why even try? You know, why not just give up? Should we just sit back and rely on grace? Or should we even bother trying to strive to live a holy life and have holiness? Well, the Apostle James writes about this as well. When he says, show me your faith without deeds, and I'll show you my faith by my deeds. Now, I have to admit, when I started writing this talk, I thought it was a case of finding the balance between grace and holiness. And one of the great joys of being able to speak is your own understanding, learning and growing and developing. And it's fantastic. It's a real privilege. But I was all set. You know, I had a slide about grace and holiness, and I was ready to talk at it. But then the more I looked at it, the more I came to see it's not a balance at all. Because how on earth can we ever balance the amazing grace we've received? How can we balance the grace we've received from God? We can't. But that doesn't mean we wallow or dwell kind of over there on the side of grace with, oh, there's nothing I can ever do to earn God's goodness. So I'll just stay there doing nothing, wallowing and receiving. It's nothing like that. And it doesn't mean that we're way over on the other side like the Pharisees were, desperately trying to do everything we can, working ourselves to the bone to try and get God to love us by all of our actions. It's not like an all or nothing kind of situation. Instead, I see it more as an all and nothing kind of deal. So let me explain that a little bit more. I have to say, it's new to me. You see, if we accept that there is nothing we can do to earn God's love and forgiveness that was won by the horrific death of Jesus, and that is a horrific image, but if we accept that there is nothing we can do to make him love us more than he already does, then the reality of that should turn us to living all out for him and extending that grace to others. We should all be living for holiness because there's nothing we could do to earn what we got. It's not all or nothing. It's all and nothing. For all we've got, there's nothing we can do. And I really like the positive tension that kind of creates. You know, we're not wallowing or self-loathing over here, and we're not destroying ourselves desperately trying to earn love like the Pharisees were, but instead we're filled with this awe and this love, and we're trying to extend it passionately, putting that love into action so that others might be blessed in the same way that we've been blessed. You know, and we were singing just earlier, weren't we? Love so amazing, so divine, demands my life, my soul, my all. And that's it, really. And I also love the fact that these issues, I don't think they're straightforward or simple. There's no simple flowchart on this. We're caught in living in that internal tension of balancing. Because I'm sure we all know Christians, friends who have been at one side or the other at various times. So if, like me, you're struggling to live a life of holiness, I'm wondering if, like me, your understanding of what God has done for you might have got a bit skewed, a bit dull or dim, dusty, whatever phrase you use. So I wanted to try to do something kind of practical to get us to think about this, and we'll give this a try, see how it goes. So I'm going to say something to you, and I'm just going to ask you to repeat back some words to me, and then we'll just try and share this around the room. So can I say to you all here, please receive God's grace given freely for you. Just receive God's grace given freely to you. And just say out loud back to me, I receive God's grace given freely.
I receive God's grace given freely.
Brilliant. You might just want to dwell on that for a moment. You receive God's grace given freely. But it doesn't stop there. So can I ask you just to look to the person to your side? We can go both sides, don't worry. Look to the person to your side and look them in the eyes. And say, I extend God's grace freely to you.
I extend God's grace freely to you.
And turn to the other side. Try that as well. I extend God's grace freely to you. I extend, great. And what about the person in front of you? Yeah? Let's try it again. I extend God's grace freely to you. Thank you. And the people behind you? I extend God's grace freely to you. Now, just whether you want to close your eyes or just think about it, but think of somebody who's not here tonight who really needs that. And picture them in your mind. And let's say out loud, I extend God's grace freely to you. I extend God's grace freely to you. And I just think about dwelling on it and thinking about it will hopefully bring it into our hearts. But what is it like to look at some... what I'd like to do is look at some practical situations just as I finish off here and explore how we might bring a better balanced view of what that grace is like and how it fuels us to live out holiness in those moments. But, and this is a big but, the starting point is really by recognizing the amazing grace that we've received. So how does that vision of grace fuel us into trying to extend grace and holiness to others? Because it's simple. You know, an eye for an eye doesn't work. It just makes everyone blind. So what would it look like to turn the other cheek, to give our shirt and our coat, to go the extra mile, etc.? I'll be honest and say I was struggling with this in the week, so I went on WhatsApp and asked some of my friends from church, and I got some replies which helped me form these four responses. So what about this? When someone's wronged us, how about, rather than thinking of getting even, but how about remembering how much we've wronged others, and yet Jesus extends his grace to us? So make the first move to resolve a conflict by looking them in the eye and apologizing, even if we think it wasn't our fault. And ask how we can make it up to them. And if you've got young kids, I'm sure you all know the importance of teaching them to apologize. What about when someone gets pushy, you know, and they start to use their power on us? Remember, Jesus didn't get pushy against his persecutors. So don't try to get pushy back at them. Instead, Jesus forgave them. So what if we become peacemakers and extend God's grace and forgiveness to them? Or what if we don't particularly like someone at work, but we have to work with them? Well, Jesus extended his love to a Samaritan woman who didn't even deserve it, according to local tradition. So how about we extend God's grace by choosing to value them and looking for some good in them? Not because we might need something at some point in the future, but because that's what Jesus has done for us. And then a very practical one. What about driving? We're driving along. Someone cuts us up or is rude. Drives aggressively. Anyone experience that? Well, how about in that instant, thinking first of the image of Jesus in front of the Roman guard? He didn't attack his persecutors. So how about we extend grace and pray a blessing for them instead, that God would bless their journey and their relationships? One other person did reply to me and said, just look at President Trump and do the opposite. I'm not trying to offer, you know, simple, glib solutions, you know, think positively and it'll all be okay for tough issues. I'm not saying this is easy. And these responses, they're easy to rationalize away. And I've used a whole heap of excuses, things like, well, you know, some people do need to know that they've wronged you so that they can learn. We've got to do that in love. But if I let people push me over, then they might push other people over. So actually, I'm protecting them. And I don't think Jesus showed that much desire to learn from the Pharisees, did he? So it's okay. And please, let's not forget the fantastic best excuse of Jesus displayed righteous anger in the temple when he turned over the tables and the traders. But in all honesty, when I think of the situations when I've offered those kind of justifications in my head for my response, I can almost hear Jesus sighing with disappointment. You know, it's not easy. And just because something is simple, it doesn't make it easy. So in all of these responses, I think our starting point is, what has Jesus done for me? And I just pray that all of us would know his grace received each and every day, that we might extend it to others in a way where holiness is lived out, which is really makes it, it's not mission impossible, but it's actually mission possible because he's already done it.